favorite film is Awful.
Hello, welcome to Your Favorite Film is Awful, the show where we're going to do our film awards this time. As always, I'm your host, Luke, and with me, the other host, although not as handsome, obviously, it's Charlie. How you doing, Charlie? Are you ready for everything, Charlie?
I am ready. I'm very excited about this, these fan nominations. Although, I want to preface by saying how embarrassed I am that I haven't seen a lot of this stuff. I'm sorry, everyone. You know, it's a busy life, you know, editing this podcast and working a normal job. But I tried my best to get through as much as I could.
To clarify for those not in the know, because you're not in the know, because we just started. To give you a quick sneak peek behind the curtain, me and Charlie have spoken before we started recording. There are three films that neither of us have seen which were submitted for the film awards that we're about to do. And we are sorry. Those films are Dark Waters, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and Another Round. They may have been spectacular, but because we didn't watch them, like the fools we are, then they're not going to get a good standing in this race.
I'm disappointed I haven't seen them because, like, they're supposed to be amazing, especially Portrait of a Lady on Fire and Another Round, and I'm really annoyed that I've not seen them yet. But I will get around to it, I promise.
But yeah, by then it's too late.
It's too late then. It's too late, but still.
But very quickly, what have you been up to keep with this consistent asking of the questions? How have you been?
Oh my god, I'm loving this energy.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
We've still got a lot to go through, so he's like, yep, let's do it, let's get through it. Not like our top 10 where we just pondered through them. You know? Yeah, this one, that one. But yeah, no, what have I been up to? I finished my Justified after all this time. I held on for so long and I finally let go. And it was hard, and it was perfect. The ending was just chef's kiss.
Oh.
Perfect. The perfect ending I wanted to that show. Mm. And it's very difficult to end TV shows. So, you know, I was intrigued to see how they were going to end it. And if anyone wants to know what I think of the seasons, then I think my two favourite seasons were season 2 and season 6, which is the last season. They were the best two seasons. And it's very rare that you get the last season, I think, is like the best one usually. But it was up there. Season 2, I think, is the best season. It's just like you could watch it as like a one long movie. It was incredible. Like the villain and everything of that season was fantastic. And I feel like that was when the show was like at its peak. And that's not to say the other seasons aren't amazing, because they are. There's not really many bad seasons, to be fair. I can't remember what season it was. I have to look back and see what the plots were. But I remember there was one season where I sort of dipped a little bit, but it picked itself back up again pretty quickly. So yeah, anyone out there, please watch Justified. It's amazing. It's so good. Especially if you're into that kind of thing. It's very 20... It's like early TV in terms of... I say early TV. It's like the Breaking Bad era, Mad Men era of TV. Like now everything's become so sort of like filmic because of like Game of Thrones and stuff. But like these guys sort of set the trend for that, didn't they? They were the sort of, well, obviously you can go back to like The Wire and Sopranos. But you know what I mean? In terms of this new generation that we're in of binge watching sort of thing. Mm. Fantastic show. Loved it. Highly recommend. But Luke, what have you been up to?
I have started a new series, actually. I was looking for something to watch, and I found something, and that's Lucifer. Have you seen Lucifer?
I have not. Is that the Idris Elba show?
No.
That's Luther. Why
that's
did I think
Luther,
that was Lucifer?
Yes.
That's Luther.
No, this is Lucifer, and it's one of those, like, I want to say almost gimmicky crime shows where the basic premise is so easy. Like, you know Castle? The TV show Castle? That's literally just an author goes around with some cops and solves crimes. That's the gist. With this one, with Lucifer, it's the devil. The devil goes around with the police.
I think I've seen this advertised, actually.
But what I love, it is on Prime. And Netflix... because Netflix got like the last season or something, but I'm on season 1, so this isn't a drama for me yet.
What I love
so far is that the premise of every episode is, "Hi, I'm the devil." "What? That's weird. You're not the devil." No, I'm the devil. Holy shit, you're the devil. Why didn't you tell me you were the devil? End of episode. And that is,
and how
the
many
episodes
in are you?
Like five.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, wow, it's beautiful. Like, in fairness, the way that they deal with it is very well done. But it's just that premise of, hey, I can do these things because I'm the devil. What? You're not the devil. No, let me show you my devil powers. Oh shit, you're the devil. And it's just perfection. It's such easy watching. But then there's a nice like plot that's developing that I'm watching, and it's good. It's good. But enough about that. Although I will note, it's very interesting that we both talked about TV shows.
Yeah, and also TV shows that are very TV. Do you know what I mean? Like, very filmic, like very of that TV era. Justified definitely feels like a TV show. Do you know what I mean? It's even shot and cut like how they were. Whereas now, obviously, they've started to become more filmic, haven't they? And that doesn't take anything away from Justified because it's amazing. But I mean, it's written by Elmore Leonard. It's based on a book written by Elmore Leonard. And if you're a fan of like Tarantino movies, he's very influenced by Elmore Leonard's style of dialogue. Like the way that people speak. So this show is just full of like fantastic dialogue. If you're into that sort of thing, check it out. Yeah,
fair. But enough about that, because we've sped through that beautifully. I've enjoyed it, but it's gone now. It doesn't matter, because this is the Ophir Awards, second annual Your Favorite Film is Awful Film Awards, starting right now. I love that. So some people are just getting the audio, but even the video, they're not getting all of the actions that I'm doing because it's off camera.
Well, that's it. That's why they should be watching the audio on YouTube, shouldn't they? Because they get to see your lovely actions, Luke.
Exactly.
You know what I miss, actually? I just realised recently, what happened to your Luke the Conqueror intros? Where have they gone, Luke? Bring it back. The people want it.
If the people comment... Hey, it's perfect. Right. Hey, people, if you want it, comment, and I'll bring it back. If nobody comments, it stays gone. And we keep the streamline, there's the word. Streamline intros that I've been doing.
Okay.
Anyway, right. Listeners, watchers, we have 8 categories for film awards, 3 of which you submitted, so it's your fault that these are here. 47 films have been nominated by you guys. So it's no wonder we didn't watch them all, because that's 47 films.
Yeah, there were so many films, guys. And I wasn't expecting everyone to put some of these films on the list, to be fair. I was quite surprised.
And I want to thank you for that, by the way. Fan of the show, thank you. 47, it's a lot. It was too big of a task, but I am so grateful that you gave us so much interaction there. Good stuff. But we're going to get into it now. And I think that the best film category to start with for the 2020 Film Awards is those films that didn't come out in 2020.
Yep.
So we're going to start with the film category of Sadly Delayed. These are films that have been affected by 2020 events and as such have been delayed until the future. Are you ready, Charlie?
I'm ready, mate.
Okay. So, these are 7 films. We have Dune, A Quiet Place 2, Black Widow, No Time to Die, Last Night in Soho, Avatar 2, and The Batman.
Oh, a beautiful list. They haven't made it easy, have they?
I would happily watch each of those films, one after the other, over the course of a week. But today we need to pick one for the winner of, oh man, that film got delayed. I wish it hadn't been. Now,
I think I have my choice. I think I've got very thought out reasons for it.
Okay.
I would argue can't be argued with, actually.
Oh, shit.
Now I think about it, it's just hit me. As much as I want to see all those movies, there's one in particular.
Oh. Well, okay, I need to know what it
but,
is.
Yeah. You need to know. Do you want me to say now?
Go on, what's your pick? Because we need to agree on like who gets this award.
Yeah, so my choice is not based upon excitement levels, necessarily.
Okay, right.
Because, you know, Last Night in Soho and The Batman would be and June as well would all be in the mix. But I'm going to go with James Cameron's Avatar 2. And the reason for that is because this is a movie that's been delayed so many times. This movie was, I mean, not even just that. I mean, it was, what, how many years ago? 2009, we got the first Avatar movie. And we've been dying to know, well, not we haven't been dying to know, but I'm curious to know what James Cameron has been up to all those years. Why did he wait so long? There must be a reason, you know? James Cameron's not an idiot. We're talking about a guy here who made the three highest grossing movies of all time. You know, you've got Avatar, Titanic, Terminator 2. It's like, so here's a guy, all of his movies make mega bucks and everyone seems to usually love them. And he knows, he understands the game like no other man. So I'm so curious to see what is it that he's been waiting for so long for. Is it the technology? Was he waiting for the technology to come in? Was it because of that? What is it? And the fact that, you know, I was curious to see it and then it got pushed back again. It's like, how long? Like, so it's getting to the point where it's like, who's actually caring about this movie? Like, I don't mean to be a dick. I love James Cameron.
I love that you said that because that's my counter argument.
Yeah.
Purely my counter argument.
That is a good point.
It's been so long. I'm not sad. It's delayed. Like,
that is true.
I think at most, so when I announced the nominees, at most I saw, I think it's a concept poster, and that's all we've seen of Avatar 2. I'm not sad that that's been delayed, because...
I know what you mean. To me, that's a good argument. I kind of gave that to myself.
Yeah, you kind of shot yourself in the foot.
I went in so strong. I was like, it can't be argued with. And then immediately, you're like...
And then you argued.
Yeah. I'm like, that's a good point. I thought about it mid-sentence, but I was so sure of myself at first. But you see what I'm trying to say, though? I do think there's something in that, you know, this we've had this move for so long, and then it's just delayed again. It's like... what the hell, you know?
I mean, yeah, it's like, definitely like hearing that news, you're gonna have one of two reactions, and it's either gonna be like, oh come on, delay it again, or okay, sure, we're never gonna watch this fucking film, I don't care anymore. And there is no in between.
Yeah, that is kind of true. Maybe that wasn't the strongest of choices.
No, I don't,
I thought it was when I first thought of it. That first argument, I was like, that's so good. Because we waited so long, but then you're like, yeah, who cares?
Yeah. It's true. I applaud the strength that you went at that. But,
it's because I'm a big Jimmy C fan, you know that. I also especially love calling him Jimmy C, I don't know why.
Jimmy C.
James Cameron. I just love calling him Jimmy C. I mean, this is a man that, you know, he's revolutionised the game of CG, like, multiple times. So I'm just curious what he's going to... What is he doing with this? Like, Avatar 1 was his massive hit. That, you know, brought back 3D and all that stuff. And, you know, the effects were amazing for the time and stuff. But it's like, what is this? What is he doing? Is it VR? Is the whole thing VR? Like, what is it?
I've seen VR films. Like, I've had those, like, VR experiences. I'm not a fan. Because you have to, like, walk around the sets. It's very, like, a play. It's like a play instead of a movie. And so you lose elements of the story, which is okay for some people because they experience different things. But I don't want a multi-branched story when I could sit in front of a big screen with my mates, you know? And to go on that same film fanboy-esque thought process, and I don't even think this was meant to come out in 2020 or even 2021... actually, I think it was meant to come out in 2021. I am sad that The Batman was delayed. Because I'm a fanboy.
Yeah, I am as well. I'm a fanboy as well. We're all a fanboy of The Batman. Who isn't?
Yeah.
He isn't, what else you know, have we the greatest superhero for no reason.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back through the list to finalize. Okay, so we got Dune. Personally, I don't know that much about Dune. Like, I know it's a big pop culture cult classic sort of sphere, but I'm not attached to that, so I'm not sad it's delayed. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so the original was directed by David Lynch.
Oh, okay.
It's like you said, it's a very cult sort of mixed review type movie. But the book is like an incredible, it's like a classic sci-fi sort of fiction that's influenced a lot of the big sci-fi movies that we know today, sort of thing. So it's, that's why people are excited. Also, it's Denis Villeneuve. I can never pronounce his last name. Denis Villeneuve, I think. And you know, he's great. He did Blade Runner, 2049, Enemy, Sicario, Arrival. So you know, he's on a good run at the moment. And plus, you know, it's the cast itself is smothered in
this
names.
Is true.
You've got everyone in the movie. Everyone's in the movie. So I think everyone's excited about that. I'm excited about that as well, a lot. But I think it's because, I don't know, there was others on this list that I feel like I'm more intrigued to see because of what the directors are doing next.
Yeah.
That I'm fascinated in.
Oh, yeah. A Quiet Place 2?
Oh, yep. That got delayed.
I'm sad about, but only because it was so close to being released and then lockdown happened again and so it couldn't come out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, Matt from 4Fat Videos was going to go to the premiere and then we went into lockdown. Yeah. Could you imagine?
Awful.
Yeah, so, I know.
What else? We've got Black Widow.
I mean, that's been, it's been delayed so many times now.
Yeah. Because it's meant to
Disney
kick
Plus
off
now,
the next
they?
Phase of the MCU. But, yeah.
It just seems too late, doesn't it, for Black Widow? It seems too late.
Well, yeah, to the point where they're going to release it on Disney Plus now. So even exactly, they're like, we need to get this show on the road. No Time to Die, the new 007 film.
That was a shame.
Yeah, and again, it was so close to being released.
Exactly, that was why it was a shame. Yeah.
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 Last Night in Soho.
See, that one was another one that I was really excited about. Because also we was quite close. That was like October. That was supposed to come out. And now it's been pushed to this October. So that was another one that I was a bit upset about, because I'm curious to see after Baby Driver what Edgar Wright's movie looks like. You know, we've seen him do the comedies, the Cornetto trilogy, and then Scott Pilgrim, and then obviously Baby Driver, and now he's going to do some sort of like horror thriller. So it's like, it'll be interesting to see him do something a bit more serious with this. And just to see how, you know, because I feel like it's more of a challenge or a risk as him from him as a filmmaker. So I'm really intrigued about that. Also, it's got Matt Smith in it and Anya Taylor-Joy. So I'm very excited to see Matt Smith finally. He needs it. The guy's a leading man. He needs to crack it somehow. He hasn't found the right roles. Yeah.
He's doing stuff. He's doing stuff.
He's
not making headway on the Hollywood scene yet, to my knowledge.
No, he's a fantastic actor though.
And then we've got Avatar 2 and The Batman, which we've spoken briefly about. Okay. Of those seven, having touched upon them all very briefly, because we've got so many other categories, it's time for us to discuss and pick. We need to choose a winner of this award.
Well, the real answer isn't actually on there. The real answer is Fast and Furious 9. But that's not on there. No one voted for that. So
nobody voted for it.
No one voted for that, so we can't pick that one. but we're going to go with... I think
what
we're
going
to have to go with the Batman. I think we're going to have to go with the Batman. Because also, we were so excited for it. And also, it wasn't just delayed. It was delayed like a full year later.
Yeah.
Like, we were supposed to get it 2021. So it was like, we already had to wait. And then the fact that it got delayed to like 2022, it's like, we weren't even in 2021 when we found that out.
It got a filming delay, didn't it? It wasn't a little like... Oh, we can't release it right now because of everything and nobody can go to cinema. Because that's a pure, like, profit mindset of you're not getting it now because we're not going to get enough money from it. Whilst the Batman, they couldn't even start, like, filming properly. Like, it's been... They did a big pushback and they gave us a little trailer and it was a tasty trailer. Oof.
It was a tasty
nice trailer. I am ready for next year.
It was like, for ages, I was saying, like, I think the next take Batman after the Nolan series is to make a proper detective Batman movie and make it like Seven.
Mm.
And that trailer opened and I'm like, oh, it looks like Seven. Like the way they've tried to light it and it looks more detective-y. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then to give us that little bit of, you know, Patterson going full Arkham Knight on him.
Yeah.
On that guy. Oh, like, I was ready. Like, oh my god, this is, yeah. And to put Nirvana over the top, it was just a great trailer. And yeah, it's a shame.
I'm so curious what they're going to do with, like, villains, because isn't there meant to be, like, quite a few villains in this, in the Batman as well?
So it'd be interesting. Yes, we've got the Penguin, the Riddler, and I think there's a couple more as well, isn't there?
So. Yeah. I'd be interested to see if there's any, like, weird villains and just how they handle it, because even though we've seen it as quite a serious style, we don't know if it's going to be a realistic thing like Nolan. So it could be, like, they could go into the sewer and see, like, a massive freaking killer croc, but treat it, like, super serious. Like, it could not be a joke. And we'd just be like, boom.
I think that's the way to do it.
Exactly.
I think that's the way to do it after Nolan's Batman. Just, like, put the weird characters in.
Yeah, put the weird characters in, but treat it like that's world standard. Just, yes.
I agree.
This is still a serious threat, even though it looks funny. Exactly. Ready. Yeah, I feel we're in agreement. My fanboy took over, but the Batman.
I feel like I made a good point for Avatar 2, though. I feel like that was one you wouldn't expect.
I was not prepared for you to go that hard on Avatar 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Batman won overall. Sadly delayed award. Right, what is the next category, Charlie? Because we're going to take it in turns. Otherwise, I'm going to be talking a lot.
Oh, no. oh no! Well, I can't remember what we decided was the next category. Was it best actress?
Or
best
it was best indeed.
Actress, was
it?
Best actress.
Best actor.
Fantastic.
Oh, or actress.
Oh, we do actress. We do best actress.
Pick whichever you would like to do. It's best actress now. Okay. Do it.
I'm going to do best actress. So, best actress of 2020. So, should I read out the nominations like they do in the Oscars?
Absolutely. First.
Right, so we've got Elizabeth Moss for The Invisible Man. I'm going to struggle pronouncing names. We've got more. I should have read this up. I should have done some research, people. I'm sorry. All right, but here we go. You can all have a go at me in the comics. in the comics? In the comments. Morfydd Clark for St. Maud. She was fantastic in that movie. Jessie Buckley in I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Betty Gilpin in The Hunt. Rosamund Pike in I Care a Lot, Vanessa Kirby, Pieces of a Woman, Emily Lind, The Babysitter Killer Queen, Amy Adams in Hillbilly, is that Elod? How do you pronounce that lot, that name?
Elegy?
Elegy? Am I?
Elegy. Let's say Elegy.
I'm sorry.
Elegy. Yeah, let's say something. It's fine.
Something. And Charlize Theron, The Old Guard. So these were all fan-nominated choices, and we're going to pick the best one.
Best one. Nine ladies. We've got to pick one of them as the best actress.
So you go first this time. Who are you going to pick?
Okay. Right. For me, it's between two. And that is...
Okay.
The one I can't pronounce and the one I can easily pronounce. And that is Morfydd Clark for St. Maud and Vanessa Kirby... Yep. Pieces of a Woman. Those are my two picks.
Interesting. Okay. So mine was similar.
Okay.
But I've got Elizabeth Moss instead. So I've got Morfydd Clark and from St. Maud and Elizabeth Moss.
I can understand that.
Yes. However, you say why for yours.
Okay. So Clark in St. Maud, she did that kind of secluded lady very well. From the first time she's on screen, you know there's something not quite right, and that just gets worse, and that's very well done. And I can applaud it from that mindset of, like, the character. She portrays that character very well for what she needs to do. And even as I say this, I've now changed it to I'm fully backing Vanessa Kirby.
Okay. Why is that?
Okay, in Pieces of a Woman, right? Mm-hmm. Minor spoilers. In the opening half an hour or so, Vanessa Kirby goes through, gives birth, and loses the baby. So you are on a roller coaster of emotion, and at the beginning of the film, you fully believe that she is in love with Shia LaBeouf's character, and then you just watch this relationship spiral, and like these little moments of like trying to find happiness and calm in this turmoil, and she plays it so well that you are fully on her side like the entire film. And you got to give mad props because of those emotions. Like you feel her highs and you feel her so lows. So yeah, I it's hard because I'm normally the guy that's just like, yeah, film, film, film. But now I got to like argue these cases.
Yeah, no.
I can understand what you're saying about Elizabeth Moss, but I'm going to let you explain it further.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Elizabeth Moss because I do like Moff Clark, and I think I could easily go between the two because I think for similar reasons. But Elizabeth Moss, I'm going to stick with one so we don't make it too complicated. Elizabeth Moss, I think, is fantastic in Invisible Man. I think a film where, you know, she's essentially acting off her own, on herself for most of it. You know, she's obviously having scenes with other people where she's bouncing off them, but to look afraid of something that's not there, and boy, does she look afraid. She looks petrified. And there's something about that that I just think is incredible and doesn't get enough credit. And especially because like horror movies in general, the performances don't get the credit they deserve, I think, sometimes. And like, what I love about it is that it's not a performance where she's running around screaming all the time, like you'd see in like old giallo thriller horror movies. You know what I mean? I just think she's a lot more subtle, and like you actually feel like she's going mad. And whether that's to do with the makeup or the direction, obviously that sort of plays a part. But like, she feels like she's going mad, particularly in the hospital. And I think she really grabs you in, because I think you could have had someone play that, and I don't think you could have bought the trauma that she is. Received as much, because a lot of it is performance based in terms of like when we first see her after she's escaped the abusive boyfriend, like the way she acts in those scenes I just thought was amazing. And like her, you know, the way she acts in like bigger scenes, more shocking scenes, I don't want to spoil just in case people want to watch it, I think are just so genuine. And I don't know, it's just something about, I just think it's the fact that she's acting with nothing else there a lot of the time and acting scared, and she's most of the time you're just scared because she's scared. You're petrified because she's petrified, and it really works like that. And obviously the direction sets you up for that, particularly in that opening scene, which I think is amazing, where there isn't any dialogue really, it's just her getting away, but you can see the sheer terror and trauma that has been put on her. I just feel like that's just, I think it's a big ask, and I think, like I said, I don't think horror films usually get that credit for like performances, but I think this is one to really like be like stuck out to me. It reminded me a lot of like Lupita Nyong'o in Us, in terms of I thought her performance was amazing, that she should have won the Oscar that year for her performance, because I thought she was incredible. Maybe not won, but at least nominated. I don't think she was even nominated.
No. I don't think, like, apart from the fact that she was acting off of invisibility. I think Lupita Nyong'o's performance was way better in that film.
Yeah, I would say that it was better.
Yeah, that's my thing. The reason that's because, my facial expressions.
But I think because she had a more difficult task in also making a character that looks like her scary.
Yes.
And she did that. But yeah, Elizabeth Moss, I think just like the fact that she was just acting off, I said a lot of the time, just this thing chucking her about, like this invisible object. I thought it was great. I thought it really bought her. Yeah, go on.
Have you seen any behind the scenes footage for The Invisible Man?
Yeah, I've seen some where there's like a green guy in a green suit, like chucking the stunt double around and stuff. So she didn't act off many things, and I just think she's so good in it. And you should really get an insight into her mindset through it. And I don't think like many other people could have played that role as well as she did either. I think it'd have been very different. That's why I pick Elizabeth Moss. I was blown away by her this year.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from, but I don't know, I'm very of two minds. Like, I'm almost willing to concede because of the fact that throughout the film, for the majority of the film, she is acting off of nothing, and it is that primal fear that's driving the film. But then I'm going back to Kirby's like performance and the range and like the belief of this like super grounded, realistic, depressive story. And I don't know.
But I think what I would say to that is a story that is sad. It's sad itself. Do you know what I mean? That's a sad thing itself. And it's not that it's easy to act off of, but you know, to get into that mindset of, oh, I've had a child, I've lost it. I can imagine that as an actor being easier than there's an invisible dude who's not there and I've got to try and
be scared off of it, sort of thing. But even I have done many a monologue on stage. Many a monologue and soliloquy to just an audience. Do you know what? I'm going to concede on this one. You've won me round with the invisibility of the situation.
The invisibility.
And I agree that she acts very well, and it is that like the primal fear and the trauma and the fact that nobody believes her in these situations, which the frustration and then the end, the smugness. So it's kind of, I get it. I can understand. I will concede on this case.
Okay.
And thus, Elizabeth Moss gets the award.
Best actress of 2020. Best actress.
And as such, after we've done best actress, what do we do next, Charlie? What's the one we're going to do next? It's obvious. It's best actor. The best actor of 2020 is going to be one of these 10 nominees. Sacha Baron Cohen for Borat 2. John David Washington, Tenant. Chadwick Boseman, Mama Rainey's Black Bottom. Jesse Plemons, I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Kurt Russell, The Christmas Chronicles 2.
Fantastic.
John Boyega, Red, White and Blue, Small Axe Anthology. Dev Patel, David Copperfield. Paul Walter Hauser, Richard Jewell. Eddie Redmayne, The Trial of the Chicago 7. And Gary Oldman, Mank. Right, what is your pick or picks from that list?
Oh, it's a tough one. That's a real tough one. It's tough because there's actors on it who, you know, are doing things like, for example, like John David Washington and Robert Pattinson in Tenet, where, you know, it's not a very heavily performance-based movie, but they do bring a lot of charisma to the role that kind of adds to the characters, or adds more to the characters that isn't necessarily on the page as much. Like John David Washington's very charming in it, and he has a presence about him.
Yeah.
And when I watched it, I mean, I thought this when I saw BlacKkKlansman, I thought he's a star already. But then it made me even think, when I see Tenet, I was just like, yep, yeah, this man's going to be leading everything for the next 10 years. And I'm happy about that because he's fantastic. But best performance, I've got to go with. I'm gonna go with Gary Oldman from Mank.
Really?
Yes. And the reason I go with Gary Oldman from Mank is because he got it for Winston Churchill, didn't he? A couple of years back, was it? And you know, he was good in that, but I think he's much better in this. I think it's a better movie as well. And I'll tell you why, because it's the first time Gary Oldman has really, I mean, usually he has like a different look, complete different look. And I remember going in, I read an article about Gary Oldman saying he was really nervous before playing this role, because for so many years he'd had like prosthetics and different outfits and been told to research this certain character or tick that this character has. But David Fincher said, no, I just want you to play yourself, essentially, with an American accent. He said he was really nervous about that, and he was worried that what he was doing just wasn't working. And I think he's phenomenal in the movie, and I think that it's a really subtle performance. And, you know, obviously it's very well written and it's from that time, but I think it's a guy that has got a lot of issues and flaws, and it's not necessarily said, but you can see in his performance that he's carrying that.
Mm.
And you can see he's bringing that to the role. And I can, and I feel like there's like a, I can explain it, like he still has that charisma and that wittiness.
Mm-hmm.
To pull off the scenes when he's like I totally buy him as this like mastermind screenwriter, which I think is like really hard to pull off, in terms of like, you know, it's just this guy who writes, you know, what's interesting about this guy.
Mm.
I mean, obviously the script and the movie makes him interesting, but I think he brings a lot to the table. I think Gary Oldman brings a lot to the table. I mean, he's called the chameleon for a reason, because he's so fantastic and he changes and turns into the people. But I think it was really good to see him, you know, not with prosthetics on, not necessarily having this complete different look, and still absolutely smash it and make me forget that it's Gary Oldman.
Mm.
Even though it looks like Gary Oldman and acts like Gary Oldman, I completely buy that it was the character of Herman Mankiewicz.
Yeah. Slight spoiler alert, you're going to have a hard time selling me on that film.
You didn't like it, did you?
Yeah, I didn't like it. And you saying that kind of lowers it for me for this award. Like, if Gary, like, I understand the pressure and I understand the characterization, but I feel he's not as chameleoned as usual. I think his performance as Winston Churchill blows his performance in Mank out of the water, sort of thing.
That's insane, because to me it's like it's more subtle. It's I think it's easier sometimes to play those characters that are not you, that are a large, you know, that have a very distinctive look and speaking pattern. Whereas in this, he's still carrying this other person, but it's, you know, he's not really doing, he's not doing, he's not having, you know, you know what I'm saying, he's not having these crazy prosthetics, and he's not moving his body to walk and talk like them. And I think, but I still was bought into that character, and I think that the subtlety of the performance is what wins over for me.
No, I can understand your thinking and reasoning. I'm gonna acknowledge the late Chadwick Boseman for his performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. He does a spectacular monologue about halfway through or three quarters of the way through the film, and it's an amazing bit of film. But the issue with the film in its entirety is that it's based on a play, and it's not one of those where it's translated well to film, and there's a lot of bits of the film where you're just like, okay, you didn't know how to adapt this, so you've just had this long monologue put in the middle of a film. And so in that bit, he's amazing, but like, so I wanted to acknowledge his achievement there, but I can't give him the best actor. I think my pick might be Paul Waterhouser for Richard Jewell.
I was torn with that one, actually.
And the reason is, and it's kind of funny because it's, my reasoning is the same reasons you just gave against me for why Gary Oldman is better in Mank, and that is because of the closeness of the character and stuff. There's a bit in Richard Jewell where they use footage of the actual guy he's playing, and like the vocal quality, the speed of speech, and to some effect the look itself is so close that if you weren't film minded or if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't realize that that's a different person to the actor portraying him throughout the film.
Yeah, my dad didn't.
Exactly.
I said to my dad, I was like, you know that this is a real guy on the TV? Like, because he called me up and said he watched it, and I was like, yeah, you know, that was the real guy on the TV. And he was like, oh, really? He was like, I just thought that was him. And I was like,
yeah.
Crazy, isn't it?
It is that chameleon-esque approach. and the delivery, I just think, is so real and it's so well acted that I would be amiss to not push that as my best actor.
It's a good choice, but I have, this was the reason why I chose Gary Oldman.
Mm.
And the reason for it is because as much as I think he's an amazing actor,
mm-hmm.
I do think it's the casting that's so good. And that's not to say his performance isn't great, but I mean, I've seen him in quite a few things now, and he plays that kind of character, that kind of southern idiot, a lot, and it doesn't feel too far from what he's played before, and therefore I was like, I don't know if I could give it to him on that basis. And that's not to say that, you know, the problem is like, he is fantastic in it. He is fantastic, but I do think that the casting of him is perfect. I do think he was born to play this role, in a sense. Like, this felt like the role that he needed. But I don't know how much of that is just what, you know, I don't feel like it really pushed him or put him outside of his comfort zone like it did for Gary Oldman in Mank. And that was what gave me the edge for Gary Oldman when I was going through it in my head. But I do understand.
It seems we are in an impasse. Yeah. Let us look upon
it's
the others.
It's tough because you didn't like the movie.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at the other people and quickly know them. Sacha Baron Cohen. For
he's
Borat
great. He's amazing.
2. Specifically for Borat 2.
Specifically. Not for Charles Cohen.
Not for Trials, Chicago 7. For Borat 2. No. For me, it's a pass. It's good, but we've already discussed it's not as good as the first Borat. And ergo, I don't think his performance was better in the previous film rather than in the subsequent sequel.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's less in it. It's more about his daughter, isn't it?
Exactly.
His daughter in the movie. But yeah, I could say, yeah. He was good in it. He was very good in it. It's amazing that he does that. I mean, just in general, he always amazes me as an actor just because, yes, yeah, how he just stays in character. Like, it's amazing. That is a credit in itself.
John David Washington, great action performance. Yeah. I don't think it's best actor material award for this.
Yeah.
Specifically,
yeah, he shows his chops more off in Black Klansman, doesn't he?
So much better. We've spoken about Chadwick Boseman.
Jesse Plemons is amazing in it. He's amazing. He's great, and he's always good. But
he is always good.
He is always good, but he's kind of starting to get typecast as that character now, isn't he? That sort of creepy, weird, you don't quite know. As much as he's amazing in it.
That's a soft pass for me.
I agree.
He's great.
It's close,
but
it's up there.
Yeah. Kurt Russell for the Christmas Chronicles 2. Hilarious.
Sold. We found it. Our winner.
Hey. You're being super sarky, but he is good
Russell.
In the film. Like, the Christmas
Kurt Russell
Chronicles.
Is fantastic in everything. Yeah. Let's not get it twisted.
Is.
I would give Kurt Russell every Oscar for everything. But
right. We're going to put him as, if we don't decide in the next 5 minutes, he's going to win by default. Like, we're putting that there. John Boyega, Red, White, and Blue, Small Axe Anthology. He's great in the role. The issue I have is that it's the script and the directing that is so powerful, because it is about racism. And he has some fucking good moments in that film where he just, like, because he's a black guy in racist England back in the day, and it's that, like, he has to conserve this aggression and put on a smile for us racist white folk. And then there are some parts where he just bursts, and it is so good. And if I hadn't just said that about Kurt Russell, I'd be putting him into that position where he'd win. But I accidentally already said for Kurt Russell. Dev Patel.
I feel like, because we're both in agreement, I feel like, because we're... Dev Patel's great in David Copperfield, just to get that out.
Is he good?
I think just because we both agree that he was great in Richard Jewell. Maybe we should just give him it for Richard Jewell. Because we both did ponder him being the one. And that alone. And you're not going to... There's no way you're going to give me Gary Oldman on Mank because you hated the movie. Even I don't think we should go off that. We should go off performances. But,
I am. That's why. Me being the average film goer is the most, like, film-specific person you can get. That's why I was so reserved about Sacha Baron Cohen and why I kept repeating for Borat 2. Because if it was for The Trial of the Chicago 7, it would be a whole different ballpark, because he is fucking great in that film.
Okay, so then we'll go for Richard Jewell then.
We're going to say Richard Jewell. Okay, next is it's you. You get to say, what film, category is this?
Okay.
What surprise fan-submitted category is next?
This is Undercooked, isn't it?
It is not. It is Film Saviour.
Oh, Film Saviour. See, like, I'm useless. You know, I'm useless. Film Saviour. Okay, so Film Saviour, we're going to go for... Okay, so I read out the nominations. The nominations are...
Very quickly, if I can be like, hey guys, listening. So this is the fan-submitted category. Film Saviour, we mean these are the film performances. They could be main, side, cameos that saved the film. It's one of those, it does what it says on the tin, but just for anybody that was confused what we meant by Film Saviour, it is standout performances within average films. Proceed, good sir.
So we've got Jim Carrey for Sonic, we've got Mad Mikkelsen for Another Round, Margot Robbie for Birds of Prey, Tom Hardy for Capone, Robert Pattinson for Tenet, John David Washington Tenet, Alfred Woodard, Clemency, and Dan Stevens for Eurovision, and Steve Buscemi for Halloween. I definitely 100% know who submitted that one, and that the guy. Would that be Mr. Sean Reedy, who's come on the podcast before? I bet he's definitely done that, and I hope he's listening right now and annoyed at my squeaky chair that is ruining all the sound right now.
Oh, you have such a squeaky chair.
I'm trying to find the best position to sit in. And I don't know what to do.
Right, I feel we may already be in agreement, so I feel instead of saying which one we pick, we should talk about the films and the performances themselves and then decide, because I feel we've already decided.
I think that we just say it at the same time,
even with the delay.
It matches up. Yes.
Okay. Do you want to do the count?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Jim Carrey and Sonic.
Fantastic. Beautiful. Right, my reason for this, and everyone's probably thinking, what the fuck are you talking about? My reason is because the movie would not be as fun, or people would not be talking about it at all, whatsoever, if Jim Carrey didn't give us a little glimpse of that old Jim Carrey that we used to get in the 90s and the early 2000s, that we've not seen in a long time. And that's why, because, you know, it's not a good movie, but...
Whoa.
He makes it watchable. He makes it fun. Okay, well,
It's a watchable movie. He makes it better.
Yes. And I think you're in agreement, aren't you, Luke?
Yeah, I'm in full agreement. He is full old man Jim Carrey in this film. He brings his Jim Carrey charm, and he does make the film better, and he does save it from being just an average film throughout. It's good enough... I've said it before, it's a good enough film, but Jim Carrey's performance is just, it elevates the entire movie.
And I think as well, like, a lot of the other choices for me, like, weren't, like, from movies that I thought were already quite good anyway, I feel like.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I was in,
like,
the same boat where some of these, the performances didn't need to save the movie because the movie was good.
Yes, I feel like this was the most saving that was done.
Yeah,
although Capone... I'm sure Sean Reedy is out there kicking the screen, punching it, and being like, "No, Steve Buscemi."
Steve Buscemi is great, you know. Kind of,
he is great, but he's always great. Steve Buscemi's always great.
He's always great, but Adam Sandler makes him do some strange things, and it's
yes, you know. He does.
What I love in these, so of course it's all anonymous nominees, fan submitted, but. fans didn't see what was already nominated. So I find it interesting that both Robert Pattinson and John David Washington saved the same film. And if you got two people saving it, and they're the leads, then it's not in need of savior.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, that was a weird one.
I feel like
Nolan's the film savior of that one.
And I just want to note that Capone, it's a weird one. Tom Hardy's performance is so good. If he'd been in the best actor category, I would have hardcore backed him. But with the scripting and with everyone else's performances, the film doesn't need saving. He makes that film, so it doesn't need saving. And that's it. That was the fastest category we've done.
It's good. I feel like we needed to, because I feel like we were going off one of the others, weren't we?
We started slowing down. The energy wasn't as quick-paced anymore, so we need to get back into it.
Exactly.
Right. Let's do it again with this one. I say, knowing this is probably going to be the one where we talk the most. Best director of 2020.
We've got to look at this.
Christopher Nolan, Tenet, David Fincher, Mank, Guy Ritchie, The Gentlemen, Steve McQueen for the Alex Whittle film within the Small Axe anthology, Celine Scamaya. We're going to go with that pronunciation?
Yeah, I think that sounds
close enough. Right. Portrait of a Lady on Fire, Clint Eastwood, Richard Jewell.
Right, I feel really bad because I haven't seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and
unfortunately,
I really wanted to watch it, and I just, I'm sorry. Yeah,
there's only so many hours in the day, and it's only on. It's one of those. We're in an age of streaming services, so when you don't put your film on a streaming service, some people are just not going to be able to watch it.
I'm afraid it is, Luke. It is on Mubi.
I don't have that streaming service.
I know.
I have access to the big one.
I have no excuse.
Apart from hours in a day.
I know.
Right. But hey, that helps because we get to unfortunately cross one off. And so it goes from 6 to 5. So.
Yep.
I liked 4 or 5 of these films, and the 5th one you loved. Okay, Tenet. Great fun. We've spoken about it on the podcast. You can go see Is Tenet Awful? And for minor spoilers for that episode, it's not awful, but I thought it was okay.
Yep.
Mank. Even now, within this episode itself, Charlie has and me have told you our feelings, and that is high praise from Charlie, and it's a film that exists from me. The Gentleman. I watched The Gentleman yesterday, and I went in not thinking I'd like it, and I came out having happily enjoyed the shit out of that film. I thought it was a proper good time.
Another bottle.
Another bottle.
Hugh Grant's great in that film.
So good. Steve McQueen. Now, this is an issue, right? That we can't fix right now. But at some point, somehow, we need to include Best Writer. Because the screenplays for those anthologies, of the Small Axe anthology...
Why don't we have a Best Screenplay? I just realised. Why didn't we do that?
Because we're fools, Charlie. Because we realised
things.
We should
have done that. I apologise, everyone. Why are we not respecting the fucking craft of writing?
Yes.
Bastards, aren't we?
But what Steve McQueen is doing from a directorial perspective, it's top tier. You could do it. Like, you can do it. It's nothing mind-blowing directing, but it's like the best you could do without stepping into, holy shit, this is a war territory. You get me?
I see. Yeah, I've not seen it, unfortunately. I'm really upset about that. I think it's because I was confused with it as being, like, is it a movie? Is it a TV show? So I was like, I wasn't sure. But now it's like been nominated for like loads of awards, and I'm like, oh, damn, maybe I should have watched it. Even though I like Steve McQueen anyway, I'd love all of his stuff. So
it sits in that weird area where it's kind of like that Black Mirror episode Saint Juniper, where it's like feature length, so they were able to submit it for things, but then it's part of a anthology, so you don't understand. But from what I understand, it is 5 or 6 feature length TV, made for TV movies.
I see.
About racism. And they are
yep.
powerfully written.
I've heard they're amazing. I need to watch them.
And then the last one we got is Clint Eastwood for Richard Jewell. And again, it's very well directed. It's very well cast. And it's very well written. So this is a hard one. and I need you to like take point, because I'm not sure. I feel a case could be made for any of these films.
I'm gonna go with Nolan, because he didn't get nominated at all at the Oscars or anywhere, and I don't understand that. No, he's not been nominated anywhere really. And I feel like, you know, the scale of the movie to have direct that many complications going on at the same time, to tell a story, still make it, you know, make sense, even though it's very in-depth and confusing movie. I just think that's what a director is all about. And I guess you could argue, you know, directing is not all about the big blockbuster movies and the big moments, but I can't help but respect that kind of stuff. I can't help but respect the, you know, it's a lot more difficult. It's a lot harder to juggle all those things on screen and direct it and get them all in the shot and make it look good and make it tell the story and be there for a reason than I feel like it is to have two people sitting there in a room talking. As much as I think that two people sitting around talking is a very hard task in itself to make interesting.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, if you're thinking about all the things in play as a director, and obviously it's not even just the directors, like the AD and everyone on the producers to all come together and make that. I just think that's why he gets the best director for me. Because also it's like, you know, it's completely Nolan as well. It's so Nolan's vision. And I know you could argue, you know, I mean, I would have said Fincher as well, but I do think, you know, this isn't Fincher's
best.
I do think this is like one of, as much as I love Mank.
It's good ones, but it's not his like top.
Yeah. And I feel like Nolan, I mean, again, it's a similar, I think Tenet's in a similar boat as that as well, where it's like not Nolan's best stuff, but it's close. It's kind of up there. But I feel like it's the sheer scale of it and the sheer, you know, and everything he's trying to deal with and the visual, he's telling the story in this visual medium, in this stylistic way, in Nolan's vision. And I think that's why it wins it for me. Best director.
I feel like this reminds me of when Guillermo del Toro won Best Director for Shape of Water. And it's like, it was a good film, but it wasn't his best film. However, I'm not going to lie. I was sold the moment you said that he hadn't been nominated for anything else, because that is an insult. No matter my issues, the set pieces are so good and there's so many spinning plates. And you trying to visualize and make that must have been like, it took some work, and you could have done that a million different ways. And the way we got, yes, there are problems with it, and yes, the sound mix wasn't great, but like, we could have ended up with a cartoon version of that, and it wouldn't have been nearly as good, potentially.
No.
Could have been great. Imagine that in like an anime style, actually. Ooh, okay.
In that Satoshi Kon style.
Ooh.
Maybe it was a bit of a weird comment for me to say about like the small stuff and the big stuff.
No.
I said about the conversation thing. But I just, it's just that, because I do love that stuff, and I do think that it's hard to do, and I don't want people to think that I don't appreciate that, and I'm just picking it because it's big and low explosions and stuff. It just blew me away, and it took me into the magic of movies. And I think that's solely Christopher Nolan, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so Nolan. Like, only he could have made this movie.
I think
that's why it gets Best Director for me.
No, I agree. The only other film that I would have like argued for would be the Guy Ritchie The Gentleman, because it's so it's so tasty, it's so good. But Tennant is that many plates, and you could tell that he had to work to make it look that good. So yeah, I agree. Best.
See, I wasn't a big fan of the Gentleman much as you was. No, I like it. I like Hugh Grant. I think there's some good stuff in it and good scenes in it. But I think ultimately some of it comes across a bit like self-indulgent at times. And I think it becomes across like it's cleverer than what it is at times. Okay. But that's not to say I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
In places. I just feel like it's weird. It's a weird one. I think there's a good movie in there, but I think I think Guy Ritchie goes a bit too far with things.
Okay. But yeah. Enough of that. It's okay. We've sorted it. Best director, Christopher Nolan for Tenant. What is next? What is next? Hey, it's time for that Undercooked Award.
Time for the Undercooked Award.
Right, again, for those at home, this is a... Is this a fan submitted? Which one were the fans submitted? It was sadly delayed, Undercooked, and Film Savior. So, Undercooked, again, says what it is on the tin. These are films that could have been better. They weren't bottom of the pile. They weren't top of the pile. They just needed something. They needed a little extra sauce. You needed another bit of cheese on that burger. You needed something, and it would have been like, poire. But it wasn't poire. It was puh. And these are the nominees, as said by my goodest, bestestestestest friendy Charlie. Go.
So we have We Can Be Heroes, Tenet, I Care A Lot, Ghosts of War, Possessor, His House, and Savage. This one's tough for me because I've only seen three of these movies and I really enjoyed them. But I do have my pick.
Okay. Do you want to go through them and we'll talk about them? Because I've seen all of these films.
Okay, I'm just going to say my pick, I think.
Okay, what's your pick?
I'm going to go with, because I haven't seen, obviously, I've only seen Tenet, Possessor, and His House out of this list. So I'm going to go with Possessor. And that is because I believe this movie could have been a fucking classic. And it's just not quite there. I think the structure of it is a bit weird in terms of some of the pacing. And I think it could have been, and I love the ideas, and I love some of the scenes in it, and I love just a lot of the ideas and stuff, but I just feel like the structure is a bit, it's just not, I think it needs like another draft in some places.
Yes.
As much as I really enjoyed it, I just, out of the three, if I was to pick, that's what I feel like.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah.
Turns out I lied, because that's one of those films I hadn't watched.
Typical.
However, I can argue against that because having only seen the trailer and from like the brief bits that you've said, I don't think that film is undercooked. I think that film was doomed from the recipe guard. I think the moment the story idea was made, we knew everything that was going to happen in it. And thus it wasn't undercooked because we already knew. We knew the outcome. And I don't think that's undercooked. That's like,
you haven't seen it. You don't even know what happens.
I haven't seen it, but I do. I've watched the trailer.
You don't. I'm telling you, you do not. You don't. The trailer doesn't tell you.
Maybe added twists, but I feel
it doesn't tell you. I'm telling you, it's nothing like you think.
Okay, right. Let me go through this though. I'm going to start from the bottom actually because my picks at the top. Savage. Savage is good. There we go. It's not undercooked. It's a good film. His House, we both have our issues with the final act. But overall, it's good. Possessor, I haven't seen. But then you've given it high praise. And I've not seen it. So I can't argue for or against it very well. But I feel like what it did, probably it did it well. But then it probably did need a quick rewrite. Ghosts of War.
It should have been my best movie. It should have been my favorite movie of the year. It wasn't.
But then is that undercooked or is that unsatisfied?
Was the
issue with this category is it's such a big vague grey area. Ghosts of War is a great film. Well, it's not a great film. It's a good war film until the final act, where it spins it on its head and it came out of fucking nowhere and you're like, nah, this is shite. I Care A Lot is a good film, but it needed some extra sauce on that burger. Tenet, we've both spoke about. Mm-hmm. Some little bit. It's not undercooked. It's just like it's a little it's a little chewy in some place, but it's not undercooked. And my pick, right? My pick is We Can Be Heroes. And that is because, right, with a rewrite, We Can Be Heroes could have been the new Spy Kids.
Okay.
It is so close to that Spy Kids perfection that was given to us in the first three films, but it just...
It's like, Rodriguez as well, isn't it?
It is. And the issue with it, right, is that it just pounds too hard and is a bit... It's a little. It comes off a little patronizing on this whole, on this positive message of you can do anything you put your mind to. Kids are as good as adults. Believe in your dreams. And it's that. It's all like really positive and good messages, but it just pounds you over the head with it to the point where you're like, I wish somebody had stopped you. Because there are some great ideas. It is full of that Rodriguez charm and cheese. But it was so close. It was so close, Charlie. You don't even understand. And now we're in another problem because it's two films and the other one hasn't watched. Yet again.
Yeah. I mean, yours sounded like... we both sound like we have the same issues almost.
We do. Movies. It's like, it's so close. But then, for me, it's so close to being good, whilst for you, it's so close to being perfect.
Okay, so should we say Rodriguez is We Can Be Heroes then?
Yeah, I personally think that, just because it's
just
so
because
close.
You said it could have been good.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, there's a lot of people that I told you, I watched Possessor with the people I
That's
live
true.
In the flat,
you went,
everyone liked it, but me. So, I could, and I do
true.
Understand... So it's like...
It's tough.
And it is annoying. It's a frustrating movie to me because I'm like, it should have been my favourite movie of the year. I should be screaming this movie to the rooftop. But I need to give it another rewatch, to be fair. I do want to rewatch it.
You see,
Right, we'll go with We Can Be Heroes, though, because you said
I lean
it
could have
been good.
Because
and that's undercooked for me, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because cooked is good, right?
Cooked
undercooked.
Is good. Undercooked
yes.
is...
So,
nah,
okay.
It could have been better.
Okay. So, I wouldn't mind. Can't say this and then have it in my top 10, can I? So, so let's go.
Right. Okay. What we got? We are doing Most Awful. It's time. It's the last two categories.
It's time.
Holy snapshots.
The last two categories.
Okay. There are 12 nominees for this category. A lot of people thought a lot of films were bad. Okay. Are you ready? For the most awful film nominees of 2020, we have Bloodshot, Borat 2, Eurovision, Rhythm Section, Sonic the Hedgehog, Barbie Princess Adventure, The Silencing, The Social Dilemma, Corona Zombies, The Second, Doolittle, Tenet. This category, I watched all of the films, including...
Wow.
Barbie Princess Adventure, and already I can.
You don't act like
say,
you was you didn't see that already.
Oh,
don't act like
I did
you didn't
not.
See that before the nominations release.
Oh, I can hand on my heart say I did not watch it. However, I can also hand on my heart say we can cross it off the list because for what it is, it does well. It is not an awful film.
Wow, there you heard it. You heard it, ladies and gentlemen. Luke said it.
Yeah,
Barbie's
this is
going to
be an interesting. I know which one deserves the most awful.
Is it as good as Barbie and the Nutcracker, though?
I honestly can't remember many of the details. Barbie Princess Adventure is a retelling of Princess and the Pauper.
I see. That's what they usually do with those type of things. Here.
Which is funny because they've already released Barbie's Princess and the Pauper.
Oh, amazing. they're just cashing it in.
Yeah. They retold the same story they've told.
Yeah.
Right. I want to know what you think deserves the award. because I know what deserves the award.
Okay. I'm going to go with Bloodshot. And the reason why I go with Bloodshot is because Bloodshot was the last film I saw before England went into the first lockdown. And I thought that that was going to be the last movie I saw in the cinema for a long time until things opened up for a little bit and I got to see Tenet and Mank. And then we went back
that
again.
That is so mean.
But that was... And I watched that movie and I remember sitting in the cinema going, I can't believe that is the last film I'm going to see in the cinema for who knows how long. And do you know what's weird about it? Is that there's some good ideas in it. And I was quite surprised by some of the good... There was a couple of good scenes and stuff. But it's just such a mess. And like, I don't know... Like, I feel like it could have been cool. It's just, yeah, Vin Diesel with, like, some superpower, like, tech powers. Like, there could have been some cool stuff in it. And there was some, there was a couple of good scenes and stuff, but, like, overall, it's just a mess, an absolute mess. And it's on the bottom, I think, of my list of films I saw this last year, next to, like, Unhinged, I think, which were both strange movies from actors I like.
Yeah.
And I just... Yeah, I don't really know what to say about it. I just think it's, I just feel like it could have been a cool idea as a movie. Obviously, I think it was based off an anime or something.
Yeah, it's based off a comic. I know that much.
Yeah, and you could have told me some of the ideas on paper, and I'd been like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. But yeah, it's a mess, and like, there's so much CGI that doesn't need to be there a lot of the time. And yeah, I just, yeah, I weren't a fan. I weren't a fan of that one, and it sticks out like a sore thumb as the.
I can
my least favorite.
Understand entirely. However, my counter argument is purely the fact that it didn't come out sooner. Because if this had come out in like 2000 or 2010, we would have been like, oh, well, maybe not 2010. But if this had come out in the 2000s, I feel it would have just been one of those superhero films that just gets bulked in with the other not great superhero films. Like, if this had come out at the same time as Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, I feel like we'd be having conversations about which one's worse.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go, Luke.
But I feel...
There you go. It's And I hate dumping on movies. You know I do. But yeah.
I can understand.
This wasn't for me.
Okay.
And it is the most awful award, so I'm forced to.
That's fair. However, I do feel you're projecting a little bit. You're projecting Rona onto the film. You're not giving it its due diligence of...
It's not true.
It's not a great film. I'm not going to sit here and defend Bloodshot because it's not great. What I need to read the comic to see if they butchered that character because I feel like they may have.
Yeah, probably.
Right. The real film... That is the most awful, in my opinion, but if you'd watched it, I feel you would have been right here with me, is Corona Zombies.
Okay. Well, right, well, from the title alone, I think you've already pretty beaten me.
Now,
the fact that someone made a Corona movie about zombies is... Who approved that? Who approved that?
Literally, the only saving grace with this film... is that you can find it for free on YouTube.
Do you not think there's something about it that's quite offensive to people that have, like, lost lives because of this? And this person's just cashed a check in with Corona Zombies. Like, yeah, you know what? We're giving it to Corona Zombies. It deserves it. Usually do I not want to give things the most awful award, but yeah.
it's
fuck that movie. I've not even seen it, but I know already what it's about.
Yeah. To give you a bit more, okay, it is...
Yeah, go on, tell me more.
Re-edited of old film footage. So it takes footage from, it's like the Night of Hell with Living Dead and Strippers versus Zombies. It takes those two films, adds in some extra 2020, like handheld in one house footage of a attractive American lady. And just splices it all together and dubs over all of the old footage. So immediately I went in expecting a good time and expecting it to not be that serious, not be that boring. I was expecting, like, have you seen Kung Pao, Fist of Fury or Tong of Fury, whatever the name of that film is?
The film with Charlie Sheen.
I don't think it's Charlie Sheen.
The guy that looks... Rambo and stuff.
It's the guy that looks like Charlie Sheen but isn't Charlie Sheen. Hang on. Let's see how quickly...
Oh, so am I thinking of...
Oh, God.
Yes, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not Charlie Sheen. I'm thinking of that other movie with Charlie Sheen. You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes, I think so.
That's it. Hot Shots, isn't it?
Yeah.
The parody of Rambo is the one I thought you were talking about. But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, I thought it'd be like that. It wouldn't take itself very seriously, but ultimately it would be funny. And it is only like an hour and some change, and bits of this film dragged. It was boring. Half of the jokes didn't land. It's a bad film. I would go as far to not recommend it to anyone, but then also I'm giving it most awful film award, so you've got to watch it to there see you if go. You agree.
Right, it's getting it. Corona Zombies.
Most awful film of 2020. How dare you try and monetize on the fact that so many people die.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
In fairness, I think it came out in March, so not many people had died. But still, fuck you.
Oh, still. Yeah, exactly.
Trying to make a quick buck. Right, would you like to do the honours? This is it. This is best film.
Right, so the last one. Best picture. Here are the nominees. I like saying like that. I feel like I'm in the Oscars.
Ooh.
Now here are the nominees. And then I like awkwardly open up the envelope.
And everyone pull out your phone.
My phone. I just pull my phone up. So we have The Trial of the Chicago 7. We have Soul. We have Rocks. We have The Invisible Man. We have Promising Young Woman. We have Sonic the Hedgehog. We have Onward. We have I'm Thinking of Ending Things. We have Over the Moon. We have Dark Waters. Richard Jewell. And Hubie Halloween. Now, even though I'm going to go straight in.
Okay.
Even though right. this movie... Even though there's another movie on this list that I put higher on my top 10.
Oh, okay. I'm ready.
I want to give this film the best picture purely because I rewatched it recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very important movie for a lot of people to watch. In particularly, people like us, Luke. People who are men. Guys.
Oh, I think I agree with you.
And that is Promising Young Women. I think this movie... deserves best feature just because I've not seen a movie like that before, and it couldn't be made by anyone else other than a woman because it's completely from the woman's perspective, and I think it's a very important film of today for people to watch, and it's a very 2020 movie. As much as I love Tenet, which I don't think actually was on the list, was it?
No
one voted for it. So
no one thought
as
it
much
was
as I
best.
Loved. As much as I loved The Invisible Man, which, mm-hmm. if you're asking me, I would have picked that if it was my personal thing. But I'm going to go with Promising Young Women because I think, overall, it was the film of 2020 that truly represents the time of 2020.
Yeah.
And I think that showing you that the importance of diversity in terms of these perspectives that are being shown that we've not seen before necessarily, although, you know, women have always most directed films, there's not been enough women directing movies, and we're starting to get more of that now, and I think this is the sort of the step in this maybe new generation of films that are from a perspective that we've not seen before. Particularly this, I think this was a very important film for people to watch, and it's a film that I really want to show like my brothers and my siblings and like friends of mine, and to get them to see this perspective. And I just think it's important. It made me look at things, and it made me question things and decisions I'd made or seen people do. Do you know what I mean? And I just thought that was just, I just thought it was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I wanted us to have like another big row about which film.
Yeah,
but no, I agree. It is like, I'm not gonna pretend like I haven't heard or read, or it's not like I didn't know this story before, if that makes sense. But the delivery and the way it's told, it's just so good. It's so well made.
So good.
It's so well. It's and like everyone's, all the nice guys I've seen before, and some of the attitudes that some of the men have are like, I know people like that, especially.
That's what I was trying to say when I said, yeah, like, when I said me, I didn't mean like I've done it. I've seen people like talk or say things that are very similar.
Yeah.
And it's, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's why it's important.
And there's a bit in the film, and I'm trying so hard not to spoil. There's a bit in the film where the bro code comes up. Where it's and like in modern society, there has been many conversations about like, hey, what would you do if, hey bro, would you be here if this thing happened, this terrible thing? And there's always like a sense of pride and loyalty amongst bros about, yeah, I'd help you with that big problem, I'm there for you, don't worry. And like seeing things and people.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to say.
And it's like,
it shows that in a sickening way, doesn't
yeah.
it? It shows the sickening side of that, doesn't it? The disturbing like, side
I've
of that.
I've been in friendships where I've been like, fuck yeah, I'd take a bullet for you, man. I'd shoot a bullet for you, man. But like, those are just words. So to see those sort of friendships portrayed as they are, as like threats, it's very well done. It's good. It's good times. What else?
And I'm very excited to see what Emerald Fennell does next. I think she's doing a Zatanna movie. Do you know the DC character?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Magician.
Yeah. So apparently, she's directing the Zatanna movie. Yeah. So that'd be interesting.
Oh, will they? I don't know much about the character apart from her friendship with Batman.
Yeah.
And her in Constantine. What else is on this list? Rocks. Have you watched Rocks? Rocks is great.
I haven't. It's on Netflix, but I want to see that.
Pretty much watch all of these films.
Yep.
Hubie Halloween, watch if you're a little bit intoxicated. Don't watch that fully sober. You'll get more enjoyment if you're not fully sober. Unless you're underage. If you're underage listening to this, watch it normal. I feel.
But yeah. Invisible Man would have been my, obviously my personal, maybe my personal pick. But I think Promising Woman deserves it.
Yeah, because I've seen everything on this list. Invisible Man represents... was never winning. But
no, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no. Promising Woman, top dollar. It fully deserves the best feature of the year. Pow pow pow.
There we go.
Pow pow.
Done.
There we go.
Best feature of the year.
That's it. We've been talking for so long, Charlie. This
we
went on
it. Yeah,
so
I'm
long.
Shattered.
But
I'm
we
shattered.
Did it, and
did
only
it.
Overran like a little bit. I thought we were going for like 2 hours at one point. I was so scared. But yeah, this is it. Well done, us.
We did
Charlie,
it.
Tell the people where they can find us and our normal content after they've slogged it through this.
They can find us on YouTube at Your Favourite Film Was Awful. They can find us on Instagram, Your Favourite Film Was Awful. Facebook, Your Favourite Film Was Awful. And Twitter, at FabFilmIsAwful. So check us out there. Do your thing. Also check me out on Full Fat Podcast, which I do every, I think, Friday. It comes out roughly. Talking about Falcon Winter Soldier every week and Clone Wars. Yep. Also check out Full Fat Video's new video where you get to see me in a sponsor take a dump.
Yeah,
or try to take a dump anyway. Yeah.
And his trousers.
If I you love that we're promoting a series that's probably got million, like thousands more views than
I know.
We're getting.
But you know, we're just going to cross-pollinate whatever it is
beautiful.
Called.
I love it.
Cross-promote.
Friends helping friends. It's all beautiful.
Exactly.
Right. Thank you for watching, listening, being here with us in this journey. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.